From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk to you. We've picked a couple of questions out of the mailbag. We'll do our best to answer them. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey, you two. Before we do anything else, you may have introduced me to a new word. I'm not sure if that's what you did or if it was a typo. But there was an email you sent me a week or two back, and at the end of it, you said, "Can't hoit." H-O-I-T. Can't hoit.
Oh, that must have been me.
It's a New Yorkism.
As in the old-fashioned, like, in New York.
It don't hoit.
The old Brooklyn accent. Don't hoit.
It don't
it
hoit.
Hoit.
Yeah.
Oh, it can't hurt.
It, like, can't, it can't hoit. Hurt. Yeah.
Can't hoit. Yeah. Well, that makes sense because here's what happened. I was like, hoit. Okay, I have no idea what this is. So I looked it up, right? Turns out,
I'm looking it up.
Hoit in dialectical British is a lazy, stupid person.
And
there's a verb, or at least there used to be a verb, which meant to romp or to play the fool. Can't hoit.
Or a hobbling gait in Scots.
Oh, okay.
And this is also interesting. It's the origin of the phrase hoity-toity.
No.
I didn't know that.
Really?
Yes.
Hoity-toity? Yeah. From what? Which version of hoit is hoity-toity?
I don't know. They're saying it right here. I'm looking. I mean, as we speak, I'm looking this up. But apparently, let's check etymology here. This is very vital for any...
I'm looking up hoity-toity on OED right now. Romping.
Okay. Yeah, riotous behavior from the 1660s. Frolicsome.
A rumpus. I like rumpus.
Perhaps an alteration and reduplication of dialectical hoiting, acting the hoyden, romping.
I see. Now, I think of hoity-toity not as romping. I think of hoity-toity as like, ew.
Hoity-toity, aren't we grand? Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I have Merriam-Webster up here, and hoity-toity, one definition for the adjective form is thoughtlessly silly or frivolous. The other is marked by an air of assumed importance, highfalutin.
Yeah.
That's what I would always use.
I never knew
the
frolicsome one.
Never. I would never use it.
Do you ever use the word frolic while we're at it? I don't think I have frolicsome. Do you ever refer to anything as frolicsome?
I think sometimes I've seen my cat frolic in the flowers or something, but...
Well, for that matter, do either of you say hoity-toity? I never do.
Well, no.
So, I do.
Oh, Kathy
does. Actually, no. I say hotsy-totsy. I say hoity-toity, but I more often say hotsy-totsy.
Mm-hmm. Which is the same thing.
But I do say it.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, yeah.
Well, anyway, so...
Well, moving along into real-world language.
So, yeah, I meant can't hoit,
yeah,
can't
well,
hoit,
and,
like that.
And additionally, we can't romp or play the fool, either. We can't hoit.
No, we cannot. In a haughty manner. Apropos of something we talked about the other week... we have this question from Ellie in Wichita that both Ross and I found interesting.
Hi, Ellie.
She wrote, if it's a pair of pants and a pair of glasses, why isn't it a pair of bras? It's a great question.
It is, and it was really interesting because we didn't know, and we looked it up. And you have to go into the etymological past of English, as always. And English is very capricious. Because we were talking before about a pair of pants isn't like one pant versus another. We thought that's a fake etymology. But in a weird way, bras, actually, the precursor to bras used to be plural. Before bras were worn in England, people wore bodices, which the OED describes as an inner garment for the upper part of the body, quilted and strengthened with whalebone. But interestingly enough, sometimes bodices apparently may have been two things. A pair of bodices was very common. People would commonly say, yeah, a pair of bodices.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes, apparently, they were actually referred to things lower as well. We found a citation in the OED from 1625, nothing but her upper bodice. So
no, we bodies.
Have bodies,
because it was also called bodies, not bodices.
Yeah, that's right. I thought it was pronounced bodice even then, though. I don't know, but whatever. So we have basically a two-part jobber for women underneath their clothes. So what happens next? The invention of a one-piece bra. It's an only one-piece item of clothing, so therefore we refer to it in the singular.
Huh.
Okay? And it's in basically in juxtaposition to the previous two-part bodice, or plural bodies.
But it doesn't make any sense anyway, though, because you still say pair of pants, and like a bra is one thing, and pair of pants is still one thing.
Yeah, I know. It's so typical English.
it's still ridiculous.
No, because we wrote back to her and explained it all. At the end of it, we go like, but it doesn't make any sense anyway, but that's the reasoning. That's what happened.
Wow.
And incidentally, Fletcher, do you know where bra comes from? I never thought of it. I should have known, given the name. But obviously it comes from the French brassiere, but do you know where that comes from?
Or brassiere, as we say it in the United States.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was doing the French. Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I can remember what... It's probably not related to brasserie, but I don't know what brassiere... No, I don't know. What's brassiere? Is it from a place?
No.
These are usually place names. No, I don't know.
It's actually a compound word.
Oh, really?
Because it's arm guard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
The ancient Greek and Latin bra.
Fletcher said brasserie, and as a kid, I remember I knew the word bra, and then in books I'd read about a brasserie and a brazier, and I always got those three word brassiere, brasserie, and brazier completely confused, and I was like, why is a bra named after like a place that you go to for wine at night in Paris? Yeah, I mean, I don't get it.
That is so cool, Catherine. I'm going to now bring up one of my confusions as a kid. I'm not sure they even say it. You know the word matinee?
Yeah.
Okay. They used to always have matinees when I was a kid somewhere or whatever. But I was
still
always really
Broadway.
Whatever, Matt. Okay, that's where it is. But I was really into animals at that when I was a little kid. And manatee. You know the word manatee?
Sure.
I used to think that people would go to like places to look at like they had like big pools. And I really had it in my head. And like New York, we lived outside of New York. And I had like people are going to like pools to look at manatees, which seemed reasonable. But so Kathy has brasseries, I have manatees. But it always gets me because we always talk about how curious kids are. But there's also the corollary, the opposite. They're very accepting too.
Oh,
I didn't
yeah.
like really,
yeah.
you know. You know,
yeah,
in
why
both
not?
Came...
Bras, brasseries? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Manatees, matinees. You know, you don't even think, you know? You just accept it.
Okay. So now we're going to leave brasseries and manatees and bras to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And Fletcher, I've just sent you a sentence. This is going on to the next topic. We'd like you to read this sentence.
Okay. The other day, I got very tired running in my running shoes and then riding on my black striped bicycle down the street.
Okay, he did it, Kath.
Oh, he did. Can you repeat the latter part of the sentence on my...
Sure. Then riding on my black striped bicycle down the street.
Uh-huh.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
And did I do it right or wrong? I know I did something, but I don't know what I did.
Yeah. Okay. Kath, let's read the email now from Stan in Washington.
Okay. Stan in Washington said, I am an inveterate, purposeful choice of words, NPR listener in Camas, Washington, and just discovered you're saying it wrong. Episodes of which I am now simultaneously devouring and savoring. Hey, we love that of you. I would like to submit some of my pet peeves, most of which I have been carrying around for a long time, all of which irk me like a pebble in my shoe when they are not actually causing me to fear for the future of civilization. Okay, number one, this is the key right now we're doing. Somewhere, somehow, an H squoze itself between the S and T and S and R in our spoken language. Now, nursery and all words similar are pronounced similar to nursery, and all words similar to strong have become similar to strong.
Huh.
Some speakers, perhaps out of an abundance of incitement and inspiration, even try to pronounce ST like SHT as in stop sign. This, unfortunately, is particularly evident on NPR, but has seeped into the language everywhere like an articulatory virus.
So what's going on, Fletcher? Did you hear yourself do that or not?
I I had not thought of it, so I don't know. Let me read it again.
Okay. And, now he's going to read it like...
Well, no, you know. I'll just read it. The other day, I got very tired running in my running shoes and then riding on my black striped bicycle down the street. I did do it, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
striped.
That's
striped.
Yeah.
Striped.
Do you know what it's striped. Called, Fletcher? It's very common. Do you know what it's called?
No, I don't.
Actually, before one quick thing, Kath, why don't you and I try to read it?
Whoa, I don't say like stop sign.
No, you don't. You have a very slight...
Striped.
It's very slight. It's called S retraction or S backing. And you do have it, and it's not universal amongst people. It's also not universal in terms of every S T or whatever is done. But I think before we go into that, let's both you and I read it, Kathy.
Okay, go.
Okay, the other day I got very tired running in my running shoes and then riding on my black striped bicycle down the street.
No, you're not doing it.
Okay, Kath, you read it.
The other day, I got very tired running in my running shoes. I don't like that, running in my running shoes.
Oh, I did it deliberately to make it more confusing. Okay.
Oh, running in my running shoes and then riding on my black striped bicycle down the street. Then riding on my black striped bicycle down the street. No,
you don't.
I don't
do it either.
I do have problem with social, though. Sometimes I hear myself say social. I do sometimes. Social security, I have a problem with.
That's interesting. It's called S backing or S retraction linguistically. And it's very common. We're not quite sure why people do it. Some people say that the R causes you to go backwards in your head and make the SH turn. It's very common with STRs, particularly among males.
I was just about to say it's that STR that really is doing it right there.
Yeah. And some people call it
palatization. Like Sean Connery does it.
What about this? I wonder with that T, I wonder if that TR especially, because, you know, okay, what's that big brown plant that comes out of the ground and has bark and leaves? Say that word.
Tree.
Wow, tree. Fletcher?
Tree. C-H-R-E-E.
You
tree.
Are brilliant. You
tree.
Are
You're right. I say
Fletcher,
tree.
You are absolutely brilliant because we were just about to bring that up, or at least I was. There is a very common co-articulation with the T. They noticed that, exactly. Mm-hmm. People, a lot of times, you can't help it even with a TR. Say the T-R-U-C-K.
Truck, yeah. Truck.
Yeah. Kids actually, in some cases, spell truck. They did some linguists did a study, and they spell it with a C-H.
I absolutely believe that, yeah.
So I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that really affects that, because again, like I said, I don't say stop sign. I'll say like strong, which strong. Although that, you know, I mean when it slides into that TR, it kind of makes the ST sound like a SHT, even if I'm not actually doing that with my mouth.
No, you're completely correct.
And it's not actually very strong. It's like half of an SH.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a hint. It's a scintilla of an SH. Because you're not saying street, but you said striped, it wasn't striped.
Right.
It was that hint of an H.
That little hint, yeah.
Now, it's really interesting. And here's something really cool. S backing is different. Basically, they think amongst females and males.
Oh.
Apparently, males tend to do the striped more commonly. Females tend to do what's called a word medial. They'll say restaurant, grocery.
In the middle, in the middle of something. Yeah.
Oh, I do that. I just noticed. Yeah, restaurant. Absolutely.
Restaurant.
I do.
Yeah. No, but there are differences. It's really interesting.
Restaurant constraint. They also say that it's more common in the Midwest, South, and Canada, but not in the West. But then I saw something else saying it was more common in the East and the West, more Southern than Northern, more rural than urban. Yeah.
But Canada is North, and you know, and it's common in Canada too. I think no one really knows where it's done. Apparently, though, women tend to do it more than men. Basically, young women tend to be the linguistic drivers of change.
Yeah,
we talked about that. So it's really interesting that common, but it's also interesting, Kathy, because you and I don't do it.
No, we do not. But as I said, I do sometimes have problems with social.
Social, yeah.
Social.
I think I might too. Social security, social. I don't know. I don't think I do.
I'm sorry. As you guys do this, are you finding more saliva in your mouth? Because I'm suddenly
yes,
like,
I am. I'm getting like, I know. I am
now
too.
Now I'm like, social. I feel like Snagglepuss or whatever it was.
But to answer the question, I think that we're seeing linguistic change in action when we're watching this.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's really a virus. It's just language changes.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that
right.
we're kind of forced. I think co-articulation is probably the best theory why it's happening. Like Fletcher brilliantly thought about it with the TR and truck. You're kind of the combination of those letters kind of slightly forces the SH
mm-hmm.
for S, you know, STR.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what's happening. I mean, you know, like that's how language works. I think because everyone talks about it all the time now, we're listening to radio and all that, we notice it.
Yeah.
Whereas before,
right.
you know, to the best of my knowledge, they didn't have radios in old England. So, you know, they didn't hear it. So they weren't that aware of it.
But I mean, we go back to how we drop, I mean, like how Middle English has changed to modern English. I mean, we've dropped all those extra, the E's at the end that are still there
yeah.
in spelling that we don't pronounce.
Exactly.
You know, and so
yeah.
forth. So, I mean, it's very similar. But it's just that the spelling will not change.
Actually, one thing we should do is get someone reading. I found a couple of them. Get someone reading Shakespeare. There's a father and son team that read Shakespeare as it would have been pronounced in Shakespeare's.
Well, Ross, you never asked me to recite the prologue from the Canterbury Tales,
Kathy,
which, as you well know, I can do.
You've done this. I hate to tell you this, but you forgot, but you've several times enlightened us with your Chaucerian pronunciation.
I keep trying to shoehorn it in again.
I know, and you're succeeding, too. You've done it several times. We can go backwards and do a search where we have Kathy reading Chaucerian English.
But one thing I want to talk about, because while we're at it, I mean, with this sh sound, then you have completely tangential sugar and sure,
okay.
S-U.
Let's
spelled.
Ask Fletcher.
Why
yeah.
do you think it's sh?
Well, because sugar sounds weird, and so does sewer.
It does. You're very right.
Actually, though, there's a little more complex than that.
Oh, really?
Well, the U used to be pronounced. The U used to be pronounced shoe, like you, suger, like that.
Suger. Well, that's even worse.
And then the co-palatal,
yeah.
you know, the car, you know, the backwards, it forced the sh to it.
Yeah.
And then it lost the.
But they kept on. They kept the SU, even though they changed the pronunciation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the same thing, but I mean, it's not only sugar like that. Yeah, pressure or nation, T-I-O-N, is shun.
Well, and while we're at it, a word like natural is C-H
mm-hmm.
instead of T, right?
Yeah.
Natural. We don't say natural.
Yeah.
Natural.
Yeah.
Okay, moving along. This is another unrelated email on not on the C-H as the S-R. This is something I've been wondering about. Why is there a slash in the abbreviation of with, or for that matter without, you know, W/O, while most other abbreviations have a period? Am I missing something?
This was Ken in Jersey City.
Well,
thank you, Ken.
The one difference, I don't know if this is the answer, but the one difference is without is one word. It's two words. I mean, it's a compound word, basically, right? It's two words making up one word rather than two separate words. So like if we had two separate words, we'd put periods after each of them. But since it's all one word, we put a slash
Wait,
in between the two
what
words.
About, okay, but how do you abbreviate care of, Fletcher? So you're addressing something.
Well, that's C-O, but like, actually, I see it both ways. But that also seems like a postal type abbreviation or something that might otherwise confuse things if it were C period, O period.
How do you abbreviate air conditioning?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I was just guessing. I don't know. I was just guessing.
That was actually a good guess. It really was a good guess. And we don't really have a great answer, do we, Ross?
No, we don't. That's the problem. I know.
You get the slash most often with two-letter abbreviations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of what you're thinking of when you said the postal thing. Because one theory is that a pair of letters could look like a word, like care of, C-O looks like co or yeah. c.o. Yeah. You know what yeah. I mean? Mm-hmm. So the slash might make the pair of letters, it goes, hi, I'm an abbreviation. You know, I'm not a word. I'm an abbreviation.
Here's another question I have. When do we put periods after words that are lowercase and in English?
That's a tough question. I don't understand it.
Well, okay.
What do you mean?
Like AM, we'd put periods after A and M, but that's not English. We'd put periods after IE, but that's not English. We'd put
okay,
periods
BC.
After RSVP.
Right. Okay, BC.
But that's capital. I'm talking lowercase words like without, whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm just trying to think of any examples of lowercase words
that are not Latin.
That are not Latin or French or whatever. I mean, like RSVP, we would put.
Yeah, RSVP.
Periods.
Period, period.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to revisit that the next one. We're going to do frantic. I'm frantically looking up.
Wait a sec. Oh, but those aren't lowercase. I was thinking of Mr. and Mrs., but those are uh-huh. uppercase.
Again,
the first
uppercase.
Letter is.
I'm just, all of these others like care of, air conditioner, without, those are lowercase words and they're in English and we're putting slashes in there. When are we putting periods is what
okay.
I'm wondering.
Abbreviation. ABBR, period.
Yeah, but ABBR is four letters. I'm talking one letter for each word.
Okay, CC.
Oh.
CC.
Oh,
what
I don't
a
even,
CC?
But you don't
honestly,
do a period after
I don't even
after
see periods
each.
After CC. I just see CC.
No,
I
just
see
CC.
All I can think of is BC, but the C would be capitalized, so.
Yeah. That's a hard question.
There's probably an answer, but it certainly seems like if we have just common words that we are abbreviating, we're putting slashes there. If it's a two word phrase, we're not using periods.
How about PS? Is PS capitalized?
Yeah, it usually is. It's also not English.
Yeah.
Is it?
No, you're right. What am I saying?
Yeah, it is. Postscript.
Postscript. It is.
Postscript.
Yeah, but I think it's from the Latin. Postscriptum.
No, postscriptum.
Right? It's, yeah.
I mean, I realize I've come up with like a very niche example. Like there probably are not a lot of things that are going to fit here. I just, what I'm thinking of are. We have talked about these other words, and we're putting slashes there, A slash C, C slash O. Where are my A period, C periods?
No, I don't. I think, Fletcher, you've really got something there. Railroad, RR, all of them.
I feel like I'm onto something.
Yeah.
Well, Fletcher, you've got something here.
I'm intrigued.
I can't see anything. B.O. Remember that
no,
from
no,
old...
I.
Remember B.O. from the old days of
okay,
TV?
Maybe B.O. Maybe B.O.
Yeah, I think we got one. B.O. That's a... Well, moving along into more important things.
Speak for yourself, Ross.
Well, that kind of was the question, right? Why do these things have slashes in them? And maybe the real answer is there aren't actually things with periods in them that follow... that regard the same, you know, common two-word things in English.
I think that's a really good guess, Fletcher. I think that really might explain it.
It's kind of weird, but I mean, obviously we can't think of any right now.
No, I'm looking at a long list now. I don't see anything.
Are you guys noticing, though, that there are fewer and fewer periods in abbreviations? Like, I'm thinking,
yes,
when
sure.
I do now AM or PM, I don't bother with a period.
No, mm-hmm. I don't either. Mm-hmm.
I just do AM or PM, lowercase AM or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the same.
And I'm
way.
Wondering because I mean to sit, be a little dull for a second, there are different types of abbreviations. I mean, there's clipping. You just take part of the word off. That's like what we're talking about with I don't know, et cetera or something. Not et cetera. What would be clipping?
You said like abbreviation ABBR.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's brevigraphs, and that was when you replace letters with a character or symbol. And then there's the one that's the most common now, which is initialisms or acronyms like LOL, OMG, ASAP, all
and you
that.
And you never use a period in those.
Mm-mm.
No, it's just, and those tend to be capitals. But I think because of the internet, we're going that way. I mean, even with things that used to be.
Yeah, I think the slash and the period are both becoming fossilized. They're not going to be used as much.
Mm-hmm.
And as Fletcher pointed out, the period is going to be mostly with Latin phrases that are kind of fossilized anyway. IE basically is, no one really knows what IE means in Latin anymore. They just know it. They just chuck it in.
Yeah.
So basically we're getting rid of both aspects of abbreviations.
Fascinating.
Yeah, we really are. Although care of, you're still going to have the slash. I mean, I still think the slash is actually, I think, more helpful in cases than the period, Because as Fletcher had pointed out, like when you sometimes see it without the slash, it looks like a word.
I agree with you, but I don't, I agree with you completely, but I think those are going to be fossil expressions like post-snow bills when they put it up, which means no one really thinks of handbills when they say post-snow bills. You see post-snow bills sign, you know, don't put stuff up here. Mm-hmm. And CO, yeah. AC, and NA are like basically fossil things. When we have new things that are coming up that we're going to use abbreviations for, we're not going to use the slash. Those are just left, is what I think.
I think you're absolutely right.
Okay, we have a little quiz coming up, Fletcher.
About abbreviations.
Oh, great.
So we have the first one, and this is, Kath, you want to read it?
Okay, the abbreviation is NO dot.
NO dot, yes.
What is that an abbreviation of?
Typically, it's an abbreviation of number.
Very good. We have now a question. Where does it come from? The Latin word nomen, meaning name or noun, extended to counting. 2, the Latin word nota, meaning note or point. 3, the Latin word numerus, meaning number, N-U-M-E-R-U-S. 4, the Latin word numus, meaning a coin, N-U-M-M-U-S. Later extended to counting coins, and then, of course, number.
Oh, wow. So I guess that's where numismatist comes from, huh?
Yes, it does. Very good, Fletcher.
That's one of those words I always have to stop to say before I say
agree.
It.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's super weird.
That one in the stamp collector one really gets me.
Is that philatelist?
Yes, it sounds obscene,
yes.
too.
Isn't
yeah.
it weird? Yeah. You, I mean,
yeah,
never,
no.
You wouldn't know what those were if you didn't know what they were.
No.
Well, the inclination, of course, is to assume that it comes from one of the first two because those are NOs, but I'm going to say not. I'm going to say they came from one of the NUs for some reason. So do I go with numerous or do I go with numus? Let's just go with numerous.
Fletcher, you got it right. I'm very proud of you.
Thanks.
I'm upset. I should have like mixed the NUs and the NOs. It comes from the abbreviation numerous. Actually, the O, there's a certain, their endings in Latin change. It's the ablative case, which ends with an O. So it gets N. Numerous is when you, the noun and the numero is like of or referring to number. So it's N, the first letter, and O, the last letter.
Oh my
Very
goodness.
Good.
Wow.
Okay, now we have Kathy's favorite. You told me this years
this.
Ago. I know, you love this.
I know. It's like one of those facts that I just hug all the time.
I know. I'm going to read it.
Ampersand.
I'm going to read it and let Kathy explain it. What is ampersand most closely related to? XYZ, per se, or the Latin et, meaning and? 1, XYZ, 2, per se, 3, Latin et, meaning and.
I think I may be able to pinpoint exactly when I learned this, and I think it was in sixth grade. And I think my mother was my sixth grade language arts teacher.
Ooh.
And I guess this doesn't mean it's true, but my teacher said it and my mom said it and they were the same person. And so I've believed it ever since. Apparently, when you used to recite the alphabet, you'd say like A per se A. Now, I don't know why you did that, but B per se B. You'd get all the way to the end and you'd have that symbol. The ampersand, and you'd say and per se and that sort of turned into ampersand.
Wow. Excellent.
Very good. Although we didn't have that, it was after everything. We just had it, what we had read, but you might be right, was it was like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, the old way, but then it would go X, Y, Z, ampersay, and at the end. But then they said when they changed the alphabet song to the Twinkle Twinkle Little Star tune, they got rid of ampersand because it didn't fit. Which sounds so believable, so
yeah,
I don't know if it's
Absolutely.
Your way or our way. But the bottom line is, yes, it was considered sort of like the 27th letter of the alphabet unofficially.
Yeah.
But then in the late 19th century, it lost favor. Nobody, it just sort of lost.
Well, I'm going to give you two a Latin quiz right now.
Uh-oh.
What does per se mean?
That's
Why
what
would
I,
it be
okay. That's what I was going to ask. Oh, no. Well, I don't,
And I wrote a whole thing about per se.
I'll quickly just say it. So it means in and of itself.
Okay.
per se, per itself, by itself, in and of itself. So I guess it would, when they're saying it, my guess would be A, in and of itself, B, in and of itself. I think it's really dumb, but that's what they guess they did.
Weird. Yeah.
A by itself, B by itself, C by itself.
And by itself.
But the symbol itself meant and.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, because it was the Latin letters E and T intermingled.
Yes.
Sort of swirled together. Yeah.
Yeah, they do little. They, Latin was really big on like doing all sorts of like mushy letters together. They're dictionaries just of Latin abbreviations because the mounds of letters all done up.
Well, I always loved the A and E mushed together as a kid. I always thought that was so fascinating in English British books.
Don't tell me what a pain that is looking up books, though. Because a lot of when you look up books for values, a lot of times they have the A and the E separate. And then if they have the A and the E mushed together, then you get nothing. So it's a pain. I hate it.
Ampersand and per se. I'm just still trying X, Y, Z, and per se. No, and no. Doesn't work. No. I'm still trying to make it work.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.